We are Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance, and we're for the people of Missouri. We're for brewmasters, stockbrokers, beauty queens, and truck drivers. Whatever you do, if you're a Missourian, we're for you. We are Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance, and we've got Missouri covered.
I've got it. Rob's theme for today is summer love. Or summertime, period.
What is today?
Oh, today's the first day of summer. I forgot that. You know, I never think of today as the first day of summer because really we have dates for the seasons. Sam McDowell's going to have to wait here for a second. Summer starts on...
He will not be sudden.
Summer starts on Memorial Day and it ends on Labor Day. I don't care what the schedules, what the calendar says.
Right.
You know, especially in this part of the country. Boy, you got a lot of choices, and two out of three have been not so much so far for summer songs.
Yeah.
But I do appreciate the fact summertime that on this blues. Show, we do skew younger on the music. Now, it may not be my cup of tea every time, but I think that's a good idea.
Yeah.
So, let's talk.
It is worth noting the intern Dufresne was given this task this morning. I said, find 10 songs to fit the first day of summer theme.
Oh, boy.
So, here we go. Three in.
Oh, boy. Couldn't you have given him half? Given Curtis half? Something like that. At least to choose.
Well, I was like, I wanted to figure this out, and our friend Jed sent me a text. Yeah, it's the summer solstice. I'm like, okay, I'll see if Danny, but I realize he sent it to you also. You just didn't see the text.
No, he didn't. He didn't send it to me. I didn't look yet, so. Anyway.
You were on the group text anyway.
Text. I didn't look. I didn't check my text either because my dad is having a health procedure today, so I'm on this thing that's talking about kidney stones. I don't even want to look at it to be honest. That's why I haven't even checked.
Excellent.
So, all right, let's talk with Sam McDowell of the Kansas City Star. Sam, I'm sure you're thrilled to know that I'm thrilled to be doing this segment today because I always enjoy your appearances on the program.
Are you starting this off with sarcasm?
Or? No, absolutely not. I absolutely enjoy every time you're on. I find I get you, I guess is what I think a lot of people would think. Hey, he's kind of low key and whatever. I just enjoy it. I enjoy what you bring to the table. And I wanted to also start off with Curtis brought up an old timey baseball reference and said, do you think Sam's heard that before regarding the fact that Sam McDowell was a great baseball player? And I said, I don't know. Oh, I thought maybe you were so young that nobody even ever said it to you.
You know, like when I was in middle school or high school, I had some teachers that would call me Sudden Sam after the former Indians pitcher. So it's, you know, obviously he was before my time, but, you know, the generation that did see him, I've just heard that reference so many times.
There you go. There you go. So you get an answer to my question, and he was certainly a fine player. So, and Sam, one nickname I wouldn't come up with for you is Sudden. I'll say that. That wouldn't. That probably in no other context would you probably be Sudden. Let's talk Sporting Kansas City. They are not suddenly in first place. They are still in first place. They do not lead the Western Conference in points per game by 1/10 of a point. I want to start off with for a long, long time now, and it's probably been even exacerbated more this year than maybe the last couple, a recurring theme for Sporting over and over and over again, which I guess is kind of a good thing and kind of a bad thing, is them outplaying the opposition then but not coming up with 3 points. Is that good or bad?
You know, the way that keeps happening is always on the road. So it always leaves you with sort of this mixed bag feeling if you're a Sporting Kansas City fan in terms of your team got a point on the road, which is always a good thing to get a result on the road, even if it is just a tie. But you're exactly right. When you outplay the other team, it really doesn't matter where the venue is. You should get 3 points out of that. And every time that that's happened with Sporting Kansas City, the issue this year has been not finishing the chances that they've gotten. They outshot San Jose. I think they held San Jose without even a shot in the entire first half. That was the half they really dominated on Saturday. they should have been up 1-0, and they should have been able to hold that lead and win the game.
Well, there's no doubt about that. And we look at the Western Conference and we see just complete and utter dominance by the playoff caliber teams right now at home, and stunning ineptitude, except for Dallas, on the road. We know the approach that most teams take on the road, that they'll bunker in a little bit. Can't people look at the results and see that this maybe is a bad idea?
You know, I had that exact conversation with a buddy over the weekend, and I said, if what you do at home works, why not at least try it on the road? And even if you're not convinced that it's going to work, at least look at your past results and say, what we've been doing hasn't been working. Let's try something else. Now, there's some other factors that go into those results. If there's a midweek match and coaches, or if there's a time where coaches are inclined to maybe rest some of their star players, you do it on the road. You don't do it at home. You feel like you owe your home fans your top lineup. Now, Sporting Kansas City is an exception to that rule. They don't rest a lot of guys. I thought maybe they should have rested a couple of more guys in the Open Cup match last week ahead of the weekend. They didn't. It's just not really Peter Vermeer's style. He sort of believes I'm going to put the best lineup out there every time and go with that. But you're exactly right that I think that when you look at the results, it's sort of just time to try something different, right?
I would agree, and I think that Sporting Kansas City probably doesn't fit into this category. So that but I mean the numbers: it's 29-5-14 at home, 9-26-11 on the road for the six teams that are in the playoffs right now.
Yeah,
Sporting is
like you're talking about playoff teams that are performing that poorly on the road.
Yeah, exactly, and of course the team that. The only team that's doing well on the road is LA Galaxy, which is considered a disappointment so far this year. San Jose is a playoff team at this point in time. Everybody's bunched up to an incredible degree as, Sporting is in first, but they've played at least one more game than every other team, and, for instance, three more than Vancouver. What do you think of San Jose, and what kind of challenge does this bring?
You know, even though San Jose is currently in the playoffs, like you mentioned, they won their first three matches of the season, and they've only won three of the next 14. By the end of the year, I really don't think that San Jose team that we saw on Saturday against Sporting is going to be a playoff team. I just don't think they really have the firepower. LA Galaxy, the team Sporting's playing this week, is going to be a little bit of a similar situation. Except for they played a little bit better lately, but with LA, they always have the financial means to go out and make big additions in the summer. So it's so hard to predict what we're going to see out of them late in the season, just because it's hard to predict exactly what their roster is going to be late in the season at this point.
Yeah, they are a team that usually surges and is considered dangerous late in the year. And as I mentioned, this year they're not playing well at home and playing well on the road, which is very odd for the Western Conference. They seem like they always should be better. Now, I don't quite get why they're not performing up to standard this year. What do you think is the issue?
I think the coaching change has really made for an adjustment period. You know, obviously Bruce Arena took the U.S. men's national team job, and that left them sort of scrambling right before the season. Kurt Anolfo got that job, actually used to coach here in Kansas City for a little bit, and that really didn't go too well. And it's really not going all that well in L.A. I mean, with the financial means that I mentioned and just the pure talent on the roster, L.A. should always be a team that's battling for the first, second, top two or three spots in the Western Conference. And whether or not they get there remains to be seen. Whether or not this is an adjustment period or what to expect from this team remains to be seen.
No doubt about that. And, Sporting always does try to take the play to them. Los Angeles usually is an offensive-minded team. Do you think it'll be somewhat similar tactics for Sporting?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, like you mentioned at the top here, even if they haven't gotten the 3 points on the road very often, mm-hmm. they're still out playing teams. So then you kind of become, you know, do you change the way you're playing to get 3 points, or are you satisfied with the fact that you're out playing teams and you say, hey, the 3 points will eventually come because of the way you're playing? And I definitely think, you know, from talking to coaches on the Sporting Kansas City staff, they fall into that latter group. They feel like they're playing well, so I don't expect a lot of changes in their style.
Do you feel like, you know, they're so strong defensively this year? What do you think the biggest keys to that is? Tim Melia is, you know, obviously been good for some really big time saves in important moments. Although as the season has worn on, their overall defensive play has, I think, gotten more solid. What do you think the keys to that, I think, sort of trend line of defensive improvement and not leaning quite as much on Melia has been?
Yeah, you're right. I mean, you have to mention Tim Melia when you talk about their defensive numbers. But the biggest thing for me with the way they're playing defensively is actually just the way that they're possessing the ball and not giving it away in bad spots. Last couple of years, this was a team that had some turnovers and some really bad spots. All of a sudden, you've got breaks going the other way. That's what you're not seeing a lot from Sporting Kansas City this year. And that, I think, as much as, you know, obviously when you look at the defensive numbers, you always want to credit the back line. And the back line certainly deserves credit. But I think as much as anything, like I said, it's the way that they're possessing the ball mm-hmm. and you know, not allowing those other teams to even get good chances, get good runs at their back line.
Do you feel like Sporting, and I guess I always do, and maybe I don't give enough credit to the individual players, they always seem to me like the whole is greater than the sum of the parts for Sporting. And is that unfair to some of the individual players that I think that?
You know, they don't have that huge name, that huge contract guy on their books. The salaries came out last month, and I had done some math on it. I can't remember the exact number, but I want to say all but three or four teams in the league have at least one player making more than Sporting Kansas City's highest paid player, which is Roger Espinoza. They don't have anybody on the roster making $1 million. So that lends some credibility to that thought. But I also think that Sporting Kansas City more so is a team that doesn't have a lot of weaknesses when you look at their lineup. Mm-hmm. They've got some pretty solid, mostly veteran guys who you know what you're going to get out of their lineup. So I think as much as anything, it's a lack of weaknesses as much as it is, you know, always facilitating through a certain player that might be a star player.
No question about that. And we have seen that Sporting, because they want to be Sporting fit and everything, they don't really, as you said earlier, rely on depth that much. And pretty much, well, you just referenced it, the fact that your highest paid player is Roger Espinoza, no knock on Roger, he's a great all-around player, but that probably says something. But we've seen the injection of Christian Namath, and then this year Jurso, and a couple of guys, but the solid core of the team has somewhat remained the same.
Right.
And how in soccer terms, we know that youth is well served. How long is the window closing on this group a little bit, or do we think that's still good stuff to go for a few years?
Yeah, so that was kind of the off-season question for this team, I think, was how much longer can you rely on this core, and how do you supplement it without going through the rebuilding process? And you mentioned Jurso, that was the guy they brought in. They played Jimmy Madranda a lot this year, a guy who's been with the team for 4 or 5 years, but really is just now and maybe a little bit last year becoming a regular guy. So they're going to try and eventually overhaul this roster without going through that rebuilding process. But when you talk about the core guys like Graham Zusi, Matt Beisler, Benny Failhaber, most of those guys are under contract through this year and next year. So after next year, that's when what you just mentioned is really going to become a question for this team. As far, they're going to have to make the decision, is this the group that you rely on for the next 4 or 5 years, or do you bring in new guys to become that core of the team? And like I mentioned, most of those guys are out of contract after 2018. We're going to have the answer to the question then.
Yeah, and you know, we we've seen the development of, you know, the youth teams and the Swope Park Rangers and the whole thing. Now, that takes time. It takes time for that to bear fruit. And in some cases, we see internationally, you know, basically the feeder system for teams just becomes a way to make money, and they don't end up on the team. You know, I'm thinking of Chelsea, for instance. They develop players and they never play on their team. What do we think and it seems like Sporting would be a team that is going to use the homegrown player template. Does that seem like they'd be leaning more in that direction, do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. That's a long-term plan. I mean, Swope Park Rangers are in their second season. They're, you know, quote-unquote, the equivalent of a Triple-A team, basically, in baseball, is what the Swope Park Rangers are for Sporting Kansas City. The nice thing for them, though, is unlike a Triple-A team for baseball, they play right at their Sporting Kansas City's training center. I mean, the coaches, they play tonight. The coaches will all be out there. They all get to see their players. And but that's absolutely the plan, is to go through – it's actually all the way – they've actually got what they call centers of excellence now for kids as young as 9 years old. I mean, think about that. They're scouting whether or not they think a nine-year-old might be, you know, have a future in this sport, and whether or not they belong in the academy. And so it goes from the academy to the Swope Park Rangers to Sporting Kansas City. We've seen that transition some, but – with the addition of the Swope Park Rangers, it kind of bridges the gap there between the academy and Sporting Kansas City. And you're absolutely right. I mean, their long-term success of this club, when you're talking about not a big market, is going to be on their ability to develop their own players.
That being said, in the near term, when we've been viewing Sporting Kansas City during the championship years and the ensuing time, it seems like more the international injection of players has been the way they've gone. We haven't seen, you know, the Kevin Ellis's, we've seen him, of the world become part of the mix here yet.
No, you haven't seen a lot of homegrown guys. I mean, I think there's been, they've had four homegrown signings now. And homegrown means that they actually come up through your academy.
Right.
And you've got John Kempen, who's no longer on the roster. He's actually with the LA Galaxy, who Sporting Kansas City plays this weekend, although he's not starting for them. You mentioned Kevin Ellis, who's gotten by far the most playing time of anyone. He's still not, you know, atop the depth chart at his position because of Ike Opara and Matt Beisler playing there. You've got Eric Palmer Brown, and I think the fans are really itching to see more of him. He probably has the brightest future of any of their homegrown players. The question with him is whether or not it's going to be here in Kansas City. And then you've got Daniel Shalloway, who scored his first career goal just last week. So you're right, you haven't seen a lot of the actual production yet, which is why I think that a lot of their long-term success, whether or not they have that success, is going to depend on whether or not they can improve that.
And obviously they've been a successful franchise. Last 2 years have been slightly disappointing. They've been kind of a league average type of team. And just thinking about the roster now and looking at it and discussing the future, because the present is somewhat similar, I guess. We know the template for Sporting right now. Is it fair to say they've gotten less out of their drafted players than some other teams in MLS? When you look at the rosters a lot of times when I'm doing games and things like that, it seems like perhaps the other teams seem to be getting more out of their college players than Sporting has.
Well, the addition of the academies and these USL teams like the Swope Park Rangers that we talked about is allowing teams to classify these kids as homegrown players, which dilutes the MLS draft. So All MLS teams are getting less out of their draft picks. You know, Sporting Kansas City used to be very successful in the draft. And when you go down their roster, Matt Beisler was a draft pick, Graham Zusi,
yes,
Dom Dwyer, Roger Espinoza. So they built the team they have now through the draft. But the past few years, there's not a lot of talent in there. You know, there's a lot of teams that are always looking to trade draft picks these days when they ask for, you know, compensation, and they have no takers because the draft just isn't what it used to be. It's not, if you're relying on the draft to develop your team, you're behind the times now in MLS.
And is that, do we think the quality of college play has dropped as more players are going perhaps in the homegrown direction, that it's more of a European model more and more?
I think that you will see that. I don't know if you've seen that as much now, but some of these college players are, even though they allow them to go to college, they're also already tied down to teams. I mean, you've got Jordan Morris, for example, right, a U.S. men's national team player who went to Stanford, but he was still a homegrown kid for Seattle. So even some of the top college players that you see are already claimed under this homegrown status and therefore ineligible for the draft. But I do think you're going to see fewer kids going to college. You know, I know that one of the things that Sporting Kansas City pitches to kids that are thinking about that college route versus going to the academy and then Swope Park is, hey, you get way more practice time, just time playing soccer in the academy and with Swope Park than you would for college, because college has all the restrictions on when you can practice and when you can't that the academies don't have. So I think that you're going to see a lot of kids, you know, that are intrigued by that option. And then therefore I do think that you're going to see the college game get, you know, diluted a little bit.
How tough, one more on this topic, and then I'll ask you a couple more specifically to the action coming up. How difficult a sell is that these days, given the fact that we're not talking about the kind of salaries still we see in other sports? A college education, it would seem, carries a little more weight than it might be for like a baseball player who's going to come out and get $5 million just to get drafted in the first round, or $600,000 in the eighth round.
Yeah, I think that's the hardest sell. I think you just nailed it. You know, when you've got a college kid, I remember, you know, 3 years ago with Monte Harrison coming out of Lee Summit West, he had a full ride to go to Nebraska to play football and baseball. He gets drafted in the second round of the MLB draft, and his signing is almost $1 million, or I think right, it was actually over $1 million, something like 1.2, 1.3.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's a hell of an incentive, right?
Yes.
That makes the decision pretty easy. And you're right. In soccer, you don't have the – I mean, you do get assigned the professional contract and you make some money, but it's sort of the average American living, or better than that, but – you know, it's not this huge set for life salary,
right,
that you get to draw and you would in baseball or some of these other sports. And that, absolutely right, that does make it a tougher sell. You're trying to sell the kid that you've got a future, you will improve, as opposed to here's what we're offering you right this second.
And let's get a little heat check. Sporting is in first place. It's really bunched up in the West. Where do you think they actually stack up in the West? And do you think they will be there to the finish to try and either take the title or at least maybe get the bye? Or certainly they'd really like at least a home game.
Yeah, I mean, that was sort of the goal before the season, was get one of the top four spots and get a home playoff game. They still haven't played a home playoff game since they won MLS Cup in 2013. And I know that's a stat they're tired of hearing. But getting those top two seeds and guaranteeing yourself into, you know, the Western Conference semifinals, I think they're going to be competitive for those two spots. I still think Dallas is the team to beat in the West, if not the entire league, although Toronto in the East, it looks really good right now. Portland's another team in the West that I think is going to be there all year, but I think Sporting Kansas City falls right into that mix with Portland, which I think is just a small tier below what Dallas is.
And finally, I got a lukewarm response to this from Nate Bucati. So, as you guys, as somebody who I know,
whatever followed, Nate thinks isn't going to influence my answer at all.
Me neither. But I'm still I still am learning about the game. I know the game itself pretty well by now, but some of the things I don't necessarily know. I'm watching the Confederation Cup right now, and Portugal is beating Russia. Where does that stack up? Do you consider that a significant competition?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think it would be a really big competition had the United States qualified for it. And I think the fact that they didn't was one of the reasons that led right to Jurgen Klinsmann's dismissal. And, it's definitely one of the bigger tournaments that's not the World Cup. But that's also – it says a lot about where Americans are with soccer right now. You know, the fact that we have to discuss, you know, how big of a tournament is this. You know, everybody knows about the World Cup, and that's where U.S. soccer needs to get to, is to where the U.S., the average, the casual fan knows what in the world the rest of these events are. And I think that's been a little bit of a turnoff maybe to the average fan, is there's just so many competitions that you cycle through. You know, I mean, with if you're a baseball fan, you follow the MLB season, the MLB playoffs. It's that easy. And the same with the NFL and the NBA and the NHL. And with soccer, it gets a little bit confusing. And a lot of people, I don't think, really want to take the time to figure out what's going on exactly.
Well, the top players do play in it. I guess my one thought to close it out is the fact that because there's only one team that can come from every confederation, that it doesn't necessarily create the strongest field.
You're right. It doesn't actually create the parity that you might want for in a normal tournament. I mean, obviously, you've got the teams that aren't in this tournament that are every bit as good as some of the ones who qualify because of the way it's structured.
Yeah, no doubt about that. Sam, I really appreciate the time. I was looking forward to this, and it lived up to the billing.
All right. Hey, appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks a lot. See you soon. Sam McDowell, of course, he writes about sporting for the Kansas City Star, and he is our lead soccer expert. Is that fair to say on the program right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB? We'll open up the phone lines again. Anything that's on your mind, if you've got some thoughts on what we just talked about, or summertime, Rob's theme for today. What has he got, or what has the intern got cooking? I'm going to say he's going to go 0 for 10 for me. That's my guess. That's my guess here. No, he can't go 0 for 10 because Bryan Adams was pretty good.
There's a bit of a generation gap there.
Two. Two generations.
There is a scene.
That's the problem here. It's a double gap. The only thing that's good about today's show in this regard is that I'm not the oldest guy on the show today. That'll be next hour right here on the program.